of the icon. We were at Tom and Jody's place, and Jody had just built a tiny house. We went to see that. Beautiful, beautiful thing she did. And then Tom and Jody took us over to their studio where this image, which I had already seen, was displayed. And as I walked past it, it just was like a brick on my head. You must ask Tom if we can use that. So I did, and Tom said yes. And Tom and Jody have been in and out of our lives for the last, I don't know, 10 years probably. And goes all the way back to College Station, and then Jody meeting Tom, and Tom into our lives. And both of them are extraordinary artists in so many different ways, full of spirit. And that's the wonderful thing about both of them. And they found each other, and they have made a whole series of things happen in the world. And it's always right to have the artists come and express how they are a channel for this creative spirit, and to especially introduce this icon and other things. So, however you are doing this, Tom, welcome. Jody, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Lynn. I've not often done this because most times I'm in a studio almost in silence, so I'm a little bit, okay, we'll see how this goes. That's a lot of times the way I paint. When Ron and Karen called me the other day and said, could I come out and talk, and Linda talked about it, I said, okay, we can bring the piece, we can talk about it, things like this. And then about 2 days ago I said, gosh, I wonder if I could call the client and he would allow me to borrow the painting. So I gave a phone call, had no idea, and he said, sure, you can do it. And so this is the original to the piece you've been talking about. And what I'd like to do, any questions, I'm fair game. If you want to raise a hand, what about this or what about that, I'm okay with adjusting to however that, but I will talk a little bit about the process. Do I have a little bit of a time frame?
You have about a half an hour.
Okay. I like to work on large canvases. This is a 48 by 60. Mostly because not only do I like to work large, but I like it when a person walks into a room that a large painting is what I call like a horse. It shows well in the ring. So you can't miss it. Now you can like it or dislike it, but you usually have to be able to at least realize that it's there. And I like that in regards to artwork because I have spent my whole life as an artist, and as an artist, whatever you do, you like to at least have people acknowledge that it exists. It doesn't mean that, oh, I can't buy it or I can buy it, but at least they see. So that was the part that I thought would be kind of neat about bringing the original. And then talking a little bit about the process. So I was in a group, in fact, I was in a Unity church and hearing a gentleman from Africa speak one day, probably maybe 5 or 10 years ago. And he was a Maasai warrior and he was touring the United States. Never heard anything about him. I just happened to show up that day at the church and he was talking. And all of a sudden he put on this robe that I guess was a ceremonial thing that he was doing. And when he put it on, he all of a sudden did this sort of pose. And I was sitting there with the program from the service and I said, that's a really good pose. I didn't want to take a picture of him. So I did a quick sketch on the back of the, whatever the program is for the Sunday service. And I said, and from there, I began to, maybe 3 or 6 months down the road, I bought a canvas and said, okay, what's kind of next? And what I usually do is I light a candle and just, on my good days, I just listen for guidance as to what's the next thing. And I remembered this pencil sketch and I said, gosh, you know, that'd be kind of neat. And I began to paint it. And I am real fond of putting a lot of symbols in my paintings. So I put 7 circles of the chakras. And I like the idea that it was sort of, I began to go, it'd be kind of neat that it was expanding outward. And that's what I did up there. Most times, these are the only 3 tools I work with. Real expensive brushes. HEB kitchen sponges. And then I like doing the textures with a palette knife about like this. So these are the 3 primary things I work with. I'll either work in oils or acrylics. This one happens to be an acrylic. And I am quite comfortable if, after we talk, if you want to come up and just sort of feel the texture, pat it, it's okay with me. I think it'll be okay with the client too. But as I heard this gentleman talk, the thing that began over the next, it took me probably 6 weeks to do the painting, off and on, not working every day, I began to notice that not only were the circles kind of going outward and the triangle and, you know, the kind of the three and the different aspects and different religions talk about sort of the three aspects, and I almost always light a candle when I paint. But he was doing a talk about servitude, and I was going, okay, I can kind of understand it on some level, but the more he talked, the more I began to get an impression for me. So I brought in some of the ancient symbols of the Anasazis out in southwestern Arizona and various things that I began to bring in. But as I heard him talk about slave or servitude, I translated it to myself. And I was wondering how many times in my own life have I been in servitude to something else, whether it's a mortgage, whether it's a piece of property, whether it's to whatever it is, a belief system. And so what came out of this for me was how many times, and this is what I was attempting to do visually, was that I was in sort of the darkness of a thought pattern or a belief system, and with the light I was willing to step out of that thought pattern. It was not necessarily healthy for me, stepping in the direction of something that was more healthier for me. And so that's really kind of the essence of what I was attempting to capture in a visual form. And whatever slavery represents for the viewer, for me, I began to go, okay, how many times have I been bound by something that was really, whether I was making a choice or not, and how can I visually step forward with that? So that's visually what I'm attempting to sort of say, but it almost helps me if I interpret it for you, because it's not really said there, or at least that's not my intention, because there isn't a story that comes along with it, but I'm kind of giving you a little bit of an idea of what I'm attempting to do, because I began to realize later on that that was a pretty powerful thought for me, to begin thinking in terms of how many times am I working at a job, and I'm going, man, I am in servitude. Call it something else, but I see that as that I'm not able to move because I'm not able to work beyond it. So, anyway, and then along with that, same concept, a little later. Now, most people, Saturday night I graduated from UT Austin. I said, gosh, you know, I think I can make a living at this. And so it's now been 40 years. On Monday morning, I said, okay, I don't know how to do this. I don't know anybody that makes a living as an artist, but it's been 40 years of being self-employed the whole time. So one of the things, other things I like to do is I love, Jody and I love to create books. In fact, we have one at the printing press as we're speaking right now.
Do you have a cover for it?
So as we're talking right at this particular moment, this is being printed. This is obviously the back cover, this is the front cover. And then this evening at about 6:30, the inside of the book is being printed. So the cover goes on first because they send it out to be laminated on Monday morning. On Wednesday, they'll get it back from the laminator and they'll take it to the binder. And on Wednesday, sometime they'll start binding the books because we have a book signing next Friday afternoon, Friday evening. So that's kind of the process.
We're always hopeful to hit our deadlines.
But one of the things that both she and I love to do is that we've now, this is book number 5. Same idea was I did not believe it was possible to do a children's book or whatever. Back in 2004, I wrote it down and all of a sudden it began to birth out. And so today another book is being birthed. Any questions or... I can share more, Karen?
You say that's a children's book, but when I bought it and read it, I thought, oh my, it speaks to me.
They kind of go both ways. In fact, it really, Tommy's Magic Door is a story. It looks like a kid's book. It is a story for a child or someone to read to a child, but it's really about discovering and finding your own magic door. And this is no different here. I love to paint these iconic things that are in turn talking about a spiritual message. And hopefully, I mean, this is the first time I've ever been invited as a group to come talk about it, about what was I attempting to do using these symbols and things like that. So I'm delighted, same time a little bit. Now, let me do Gail first.
Sure. Tell me about the bowl and what the candle seems to be sitting in.
Well, when the gentleman posed, you know, he kind of did this sort of thing, and I was going, I love, so all I'm trying to do is, is create a feeling like a person is holding a candle, and whether you want to use it, the term the Christ light or whatever illumination of your tradition is, I don't really care either way, but the idea is that you're, that for me, a lot of times when I'm, normally what I've done when I'm doing a talk, I would have lit in a candle, and there's probably one going in here right now, just so that I myself don't think in terms of Tom, but I think in terms of co-creating with Spirit. So when I walked in here today, I said a little blessing. And even Jody made me this thing that's called, we call a prosperous heart. As I'm talking, if I feel like I am drifting and getting into a little bit like me, 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 I will tap it and kind of go, we're in partnership here. The three of us are presenting an idea. And so it helps me. And that's what that represents, is that I'm using some sort of symbol that I'm almost like in serving, like in front of me. And I just like the idea of the candle, what it represents, the illumination, things like that. But it could be almost anything that represents for you.
And well, yeah, because when I looked at it, the first thing that came to mind was that it's sitting in water, and that's what those white things coming down, that's water dripping. Did you...
That was not my what I thought, but it could. This is the part that's beautiful, is that everyone will see different things, and that's, as soon as you begin to do that as an individual, you've left what I call, you've now entered into the world of imagination or into the creative world that I love to dabble in. Because there may be other stronger symbology for you, that what that represents may be, you know, I don't know, it could be tears, it could be something that speaks to you. It's the same thing. This, he just happened to be selling these little trinkets where the people in his tribe made, and I purchased one of these that they sort of would carry around, and so I wanted to put it in it, and at the same time I wanted to have a kind of a new, and also basing on ancient traditions of like the way the early cave painters did. So I took symbols off the early cave paintings to show how they used to illustrate stories before there were books and things like that. They would probably go up, and I'm sure in a room like this, they'd be in a cave and going, and let me tell you about the story of the Great Flood and, you know, and 9,000, you know, BC. You know. I don't know. So.
Tom.
Hang on, just have a question here. Sorry.
Well, I have two questions. Is it difficult to sell something so beautiful, that's so much a part of you, part of your creative process? Is it like selling your children or something?
It is.
Yeah.
And back to the servitude question.
Uh-huh.
Early on in my career, I used to base everything on my sort of happiness, as if not only did you like it, but did you buy it?
Yeah.
Nowadays, I am so much healthier going, I love to come talk about it, I love it's like this, but I'm not basing it on the fact is that I was hoping that if you showed an interest that therefore I would walk away with a commission or I would sell the piece.
Right.
Much healthier nowadays, but early on, it was the other way around. And that's where I love the idea of leaving that shadow thought, my shadow side. There's different terminology that other people use. The idea that sort of unhealthy side was, I'm no longer. Now, it doesn't mean that that I don't have those thoughts periodically. But that's where I kind of tap this and go, I'm okay. Because I had to, and I don't know how it sounds, but I realized over the 40 years of being an artist that I struggle with the highs and the lows of my self-worth was attached to the sale of the paintings. And so I was, obviously I was wanting that worthiness, but at the same time, if you go, I'd like it, and then I go, well, this is the price of this, and you go, oh, I can't do that, then there was a kind of an uneven exchange of not healthy energy. So it's kind of like, I had it's like I had these done because this belongs to somebody. Uh-huh. And I said, what could I bring that in turn would be a reflection? Uh-huh. And if someone says, gosh, I would love to have something, I said, well, maybe we can create something like this, and this would be a healthy exchange. Maybe, maybe not. So.
And the other part of the question is, the person who bought it, did they have a spirit? Were they on a spiritual journey, or they were taken by the form, or did it touch their heart, or do you know?
How honest you want me to be?
I don't know who it is. So this has got to change.
Well, the irony
has got to change somebody's life.
The irony of it. What the heck, you know? You'll never see me again in life. An attorney bought it.
Uh-huh.
And down the road, I was eventually in a legal issue, and he was on the other side. And I was like going, wow, isn't this interesting?
Wow.
What an irony, in a sense.
Really?
At the same time, I'm going, I still have to trust that that whatever I was experiencing at that particular moment was not really me. And the real me he had, and I'm not even sure if he knew it on that level.
Right.
But I don't know if that makes sense.
No, I totally understand.
I mean, you know, there's sometimes you just have to go, I have to step in this direction, even though I don't know if they're sensing where I'm wanting to come from. And he may have gone, he may feel that way. He asked, can we take the lecture today? I'm like, well, first I was a little strange to call him. Because the last time I saw him, it was like, wow. That's a tough attorney.
So we're taping this lecture right now, and you're going to give it to him?
Maybe.
There's
could be.
Sorry,
I just probably turned six shades of red.
Sorry I asked the question.
No, that's a good question, though, because I did think about that down the road. And then I actually said, you know, it would be great to come today to talk about the painting.
Right.
And I said, why didn't I call him? The worst thing he could say is, you know, heck no, you know, or other words and things like this. But I said, you know what, I will take a risk, which is, well, it's like, can I see the magic rolling, please? 45, 46 days ago, I woke up in the morning and said, gosh, you know, I think I'd like to do another children's book. And I knew it was 40 days till Easter. And I said, what would be great? And there's a story that's been kind of the magic door. I originally did it called My Magic Door at the Behrman Bakery. And when I did the book back in 2004, I had a thought, and all of a sudden down the road, within 2 or 3 weeks, I had sold 700 advance copies of a book. The day that it was going on, the morning that it was going on press, that night before, I got a call from someone who said, Tom, I hate to tell you this, but there's no story. I said, well, I draw really good, but I write like stick figures. Some people say, I can't draw, I draw like stick figures. Like, well, I can relate to writing in the opposite direction. So it's been interesting. It's now been since 2004, and that this book has been what I call marinating inside me to want to come out again. And it's being printed right now at this moment.
Yeah.
So it came from, the thought popped up. Then I said, could it be done? I said, well, the illustrations, most of the illustrations are already done, so that can be done. Could it be written? I don't know. In fact, Jody may share, we actually were writing another story. She was. And someone said, do you have an alternate plan just in case the story she's working on doesn't work? And I said, well, there is a story that I've been wanting to kind of talk about. So I began writing a sub-story. And eventually she heard about this other sub-story. She said, well, when were you going to tell me? And I said, well, I didn't. The other story was going so great, I didn't want to interrupt that creative process. And so we talked about it, and then we switched to the sub-story, and that's what's coming out. So I don't know if that makes all the kind of sense, but the creative process for me is kind of like that of listening. Right? Sorry?
Hang on a second. Would you read one or two lines from The Dreamer or one of your books just to give a sense of... the material that's in there.
I also have the news story. Do you want to read a little of that?
Oh, that'd be wonderful.
That's
really
cool.
One of the vignettes is probably easier to do. Right, this is written to the child within. And there's a page in here that we call Old Dusty. And we usually suggest people read this to get an idea of what the book is about. This guy was set aside a long time ago. Neglected and sad, he waits patiently for you to return. He's a childhood dream of being a pilot or an actress or an artist, you know, the one that you promised yourself you'd get back to someday. Old Dusty is an enduring little fellow, just waiting and waiting. He is a reflection of you. So what is it that you're waiting for? The kids to grow up? Your partner to cheer you on? Your pants to catch fire? All the conditions will be right the minute you take that first step towards your dreams. And then in throughout the book are some characters like the Dreamer Bear is about the balancing act it takes as you risk being your true authentic self. And we have a couple of monsters. One is Yeah But. he's the internal doubter. And the other monster that gets a lot of attention in our book is Stomp and Squish. This is the outside person that knows better for you. So that's what that book's about.
I'm sorry, there was one, Gail, I don't know, maybe.
So when is Joni's book coming out? She said she's...
I don't know. We're thinking about it. Mine already came out. It's love poems from the dog.
We got your very first book, which I was fascinated with the intricate drawings, but the story really struck me. And if I might say this, I think you were speaking about what we are here studying about, searching for that true self within our own inner authority. Another part of what we're learning from Phil that we've kind of known is that we are to stand in this world to invite others into this journey of freedom, which I think you're speaking of. And so you are doing it with your painting and your books. You're doing the same thing.
I think that I'm sensing, I'm not sure if I'm going to say this, but there's a collective thing going on. Maybe vibrational change, I don't know, because I'm sensing something is within myself, something different is happening. And a good example is being a freelance artist or whatever, many years I felt like I was independent, doing it on my own, my whole freedom thing, and I'm just beginning to embrace the idea of co-creating community with, and you won't believe on this last book, gosh, there was probably 100 people that I basically every morning would say, I need help. And even to the point where we put it up on Kickstarter, which if you haven't ever heard of Kickstarter, it's a delightful program. Because one of the things that I struggle with is that we love to create the books. Now, how we pay for the books to print it and how we distribute them is like, I am at the baby stages of how that is achieved. But we love the whole creative aspect. So on this last particular journey, I just, every morning, because I knew that somehow I was just drawn to a 40-day plan to see if this next good book could be birthed. And it was, boy, every day I was having to learn Facebook and Twitter and constant contact. And, okay, I don't know how to do this. Go find someone. And all of a sudden, someone would show up. I can teach you how to use constant contact. I can teach you. So every morning I was going on Facebook and just saying, well, this is what was happening yesterday. Even the days where Yeah But or the doubts, I'm going, I don't think it's possible. And, you know, and if you, Kickstarters, if you don't fund the whole thing, nothing gets funded. Mm-hmm. So it's 100% or nothing. And if you can go over, but if you go under, just you gave it a good try. And so we kept going. And it wasn't just coming from one direction. It was coming from many ways. But I can't believe the amount of, and I'll even say how much female energy helped me produce this next book. It just seemed like that whole feminine energy, Tom, we can help you. Or it just seemed to be everyone I was needing advice from came from the feminine side. And if you've been around me a long time, to me, that's the face of God. So I'm honored to be in the presence, you know, and I don't know how it all sounds. So most times I'm doing the divine feminine. I love to paint her, and that's just what resonates for me, that is the face of God for me. So.
Did you say you just graduated from college?
Back in 1971. I graduated on a Saturday night, and Monday I said, I think I'd like to make a living as an artist.
So you've been working this journey, which seemed like a trailblazing step all along,
and
you've made it manifest. So
yes.
Here you are.
Yes, yes. Graduating, that's probably a good analogy, or another way to contemplate. Maybe another painting. But I would love to see, do you mind reading a little bit of the new one?
I'm reading that. I'm trusting you.
Once there was a talented, occasionally extraordinary, unusual, exceptional, outstanding, and incredible young boy who was a great adventurer. Just about every morning, he would slowly make his way to the Bear Moon Bakery, savoring the delightful smells wafting down the street that came to greet him. Trotting alongside him was his trusty dog, Hanky, who also enjoyed the delightful aromas. So this will be the spread on that one. I'm not going to read it again. One morning, while sitting at the bakery enjoying his world-famous piggy and a cup of hot chocolate, he pulled out his sketchbook and began to draw. He sketched a whimsical tree, wearing wonderful watches, and it even had ears. Can you imagine? He was having tons of fun, playing and drawing, drawing and playing. As he sat back to ponder his enchanting creation, he noticed something a little unusual. A detail that he didn't remember putting in there. A tiny key? Where did that come from, he wondered. He stared and he stared and he stared at the key. Unexpectedly, the key twitched. Gazing in utter disbelief, it twitched again. Rubbing his eyes and shaking his head to clear his mind, he took an even closer look. It twitched again. He slammed his sketchbook shut and jerked on his pack and hurriedly bolted off to school, feeling completely bewildered and admittedly quite excited at what he had seen. So that's the beginning.
So now I'll toss out something else to you. There's probably no accident that we're here today, that there's something been brewing within you that you've been sitting on, a dream or something like that, because it is interesting. Most every time we go now talk, we at least find one person who goes, wow, I now know who you're talking to. That Lynn called me here for some reason, but there's someone in this room, I have no clue what it is, that has been sitting on something, and we can share thoughts, we'll talk later, but I would encourage you to, the key is twitching, and if nothing else, maybe the idea that whatever that is beginning to knock on the magic door, and the trick is, are you willing to accept the invitation and step through it, even though you have no clue how whatever it is, what I call the obstacle may appear to be, that may be so overwhelming, just like the idea of a book, or could be books. I've been surprised, there's probably, we've now close to 40 or 50 books that are being birthed around the country, that just because they go, I read it and I got so shook, I knew that I've been sitting on, whether it's a children's book, a novel, or whatever, or something that they know exactly what it is, but they're unwilling to kind of share it out. So I don't know. I don't know why I'm here other than, sounds like a good plan, but normally I kind of toss out that invitation that there's something incubating, and if nothing else, I hope that Jody and I, or whatever the weekend here is, you begin to take those baby steps in that direction. So that's what Tommy's Magic Door, that's what Dare to Dream is about, that's what Love Poems from Dog, anyway, so. Any other thoughts or questions?
I have a question about your relationship with Jody and the timing of that. I mean, this is a personal question. The timing of it in your life.
You don't seem to, I don't hold too many of them back, so I may pause and go,
okay. But the timing of it in your life, and how would you describe the path that you two traveled together as opposed to the paths you had individually before, and how do they dovetail together? I know it's a big question, but if you can just...
I'll share my side, and you want to go first? You want me to go first?
Go ahead, Tom.
Okay, this is kind of like the attorney thing. I'm going. One day, there's a book that has really worked real well for me called The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron. In fact, I've gone through it 35 times. Every time I go through it, another project is birthed. whether it's A Travel Somewhere in the World or another book or whatever. In that particular book, there was some part along that particular journey, she asked you, if you were able to go to, metaphorically, like a, what is that called, where all the food is laid out? A smorgasbord, or, you know, and everything in there is, you know, you could pick and choose whatever you wanted in life, but she used the term, how about a relationship? So that's how I heard the question. Well, I would, this is how, what I would think a relationship would look like for me. And I began naming and things like this. And it was the way that I've always wanted to be in relationship. Now, I have to tell you, I was not in that relationship. And then it didn't take long, maybe 3 or 4 days, what I was out picturing showed up. So I'm a little bit of the school that if you'll begin to write down what it is, and then I had to take another risk because I was in a relationship. In fact, I was married. I was going, wow, now what do you do? Other than I knew what I wanted and I knew what I wanted in life, and I was not feeling that. In fact, when I wrote it down, I was kind of hoping that relationship would evolve into that. And been hoping that for 15, 20 years. So all I did is go, okay, I'm willing to write down and take the biggest risk that I'm willing to take. And so I said, I don't know if this is going anywhere at all, and that's not my intention, but I'm feeling something. And then she in turn said, I am also feeling something, but I don't know what to do about it either. So we just let it stay there, and that's how it evolved. I don't know if that answers it. You know, someone may be on the opposite end of that, like, wow, that happened to me, and I'm sorry. But on the other hand, all I can speak is how it felt to me. So. Still. So. And I think that's where, I believe that that's what we're all supposed to do in life. Yeah. My own fears, my own doubts, my own yeah buts, my own stomp and squishes, my own unworthiness or whatever, and that's what I would call my shadow side or my dark side or my servitude side, where I don't believe it's possible. I either through my life experiences or my own self-doubt or whatever. So it's like we 2 days ago we began looking at what if we went on a 1-year book tour or the rest of our life book tour to talk about how do you do that, there are people who do this. I just don't know how, other than, oh my God, the motorhome, this and that and that and that and all. And I go, you know what, let's just still walk in that direction, even though I have no clue how to do it. Now, someone in the room, that may be why I'm here. Tom, I've done that. I can help share it with you. And that, I may be thinking I'm here to go, let me tell you about this painting. You may go, oh, let me tell you. So it may be a give and take. So I don't know if that answers, but for me, I have noticed as soon as when we do our talks about Dare to Dream, I am surprised that 99.9% won't write down. I'm blown away by that. Writing it down once we kind of figure out, Tom, this has been one of my dreams, and I go, if you'll write it down, I go, here's a piece of paper. They won't write it down. I'm going, now, someone like me, that seems contrary. So, is it because if you think you write it down, it'll come true? But that's what you want. I'm blown away that that simple act of writing it down seems to be so, that seems pretty innocent to me. But when we go out and talk a lot, I'm surprised. I go, now you know what it is. I just ask you to write it down and say, you don't need to know how. The universe, whatever you want to call God, God source, will provide. And I'm always blown away. So, I don't know, did that?
Yes, fascinating.
So you may have she may have a whole different spin on it.
What I wrote down was, I want to be cherished.
Mm.
And he's been cherishing me ever since.
Mm. Wow, that's just
wonderful. I think it's kind of simple like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I've been now around the world 27 times. And the first one, I just wrote down that, in fact, I was in a group like this, and they said, is there a dream you've wanted to have your whole life? And I go, and after you go through the, you know, you want to lose 5 pounds or 10 pounds, and after you go through a day or two of doing that, and you go, well, I've got one. I've always wanted to go to the Olympic Games. And every 4 years, I'd send my work to Sports Illustrated and say, I, you know, and every 4 years, I'd get a rejection letter. So they go, okay, would you be willing to play the game of getting to the Olympic Games again? And it was 66 days away from getting to the Olympic Games in LA. That was how far my barrier of belief that it was possible from San Antonio to LA. I didn't believe that it was possible because I thought it had to be through Sports Illustrated. So they asked me for the, we spent a whole weekend, I don't know how long you've been here, but probably been a couple days. They said, so the whole weekend you come up with ideas of how to create that dream. And so I came up with 39 ways in which to get to the Olympic Games. And number one on the list was Sports Illustrated. And I said, okay, you've got 66 days or 67 days. So the next morning, you take an action. So I sent my portfolio off Sports Illustrated. Rejected. Number two, number three, I think 10th on the list was Rowing Magazine. Number 18th was Fitness Magazine. And I went down the line and we met again. And it was the day before the Olympic Games were supposed to open up. I'm sitting there going... And, you know, I said, man, I really had done a good job this year of trying to get the dream. It hadn't happened. I had done 38 out of the 39. And they were sitting there going, and of course, everyone else is sharing. They're doing the same thing. They're going, they were doing novel, or they were doing whatever their dream was that they came up with this period of time, during this short period of time. And I'm sitting there going, they go, what was number 39? I said, well, I figured that was going to cost me around $10,000 to $12,000 to get to L.A., to put on the show, to do the whole thing like this and so forth. They said, okay. And so anyway, we left it that night, and I said, why was I reluctant to try to raise $10,000? Well, it's not possible. So anyway, somewhere during the night, in the morning, 8 o'clock, I made a phone call, and by 11:30, I'd raised $10,000. And then, of course, the mayor of L.A. says, don't come. Every hotel's booked up. Every rental car's booked up. So I said, you know what I'm going to do is I'm going to buy an airline ticket on Southwest Airlines, fly to L.A., I'll get off the airport, take a cab to the Coliseum and sit by the gates and say, I made it, and then fly home that night. The whole idea is you don't have to have, it doesn't have to be. So I'm on the plane, flying to LA, sitting next to me is the Bulgarian weightlifting team. And they go, what are you doing? And we have a hotel room. And I go, okay. And so I arrive there, and so I'm going, you know, okay, this is a little weird. And so I'm there in LA, and I'm getting, you know, up there, and I'm going, wow, this is crazy, but it's happening. And I went to the opening ceremonies. Now I'm outside the gates with other people who could not afford to get in, but I'm sitting there watching the opening ceremonies, and I'm going, it's happening. I'm going, okay, it's not necessary. I didn't say that I had to be in a seat inside. And so I'm sitting there going, and after 2 weeks, I got to every event I wanted to go to. Even at that particular year, Carl Lewis was racing some guy out of Canada, and it was the hottest ticket in the whole world. And someone calls me 2 days before and says, I've got a ticket. Would you like to go? But you've got to get to the stadium 7 hours before because they run for 9.9 seconds. But at that particular, I'm going, sure, that's what everyone, that is the premier race everyone's been watching for at that Olympic Games. And it was Carl Lewis and somebody. It may not have been Ben Green, but it was somebody. So you go to the stadium 7 hours early, and you're waiting for a track meet that they're going to run 9.9 seconds. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you kind of think about it, that's kind of crazy. But I'm sitting there going, this is part of the dream. I just thought the dream had to be, it was Sports Illustrated. But I came home, put on a show, and then it dawned on me, I said, man, I am living so small. That's a pretty major thing. And so I said, well, next year, I said, where would I like to go? I've been wanting to go to Egypt. Let's try the same thing. And I went to Egypt. The next year, I said, where do you want to go? Let's go to Italy. I'd like to go to Italy. If you're an artist, you've got to take a trip to Mecca, which is Italy. And there were some times in which I had 10 investors. There were some times I had sold a bunch of paintings. I've now gotten better about going, on my good days, don't need to know how.
By the way, Karen and I saw your exhibition in Italy from your recent trip in Curda. Stunning work.
It was a great stuff. Love doing that. Love traveling abroad.
Both of your paintings were just wonderful.
Yeah, thank you. I don't know if that, I'm not sure. Someone asked me that. I'm all over the place at the moment. That's kind of like how I paint something. Rounds. Take a brief breath. So, but it just happens so many times now that I just... In fact, for us, is write it down. Wouldn't it be great to take a year-long book tour? And, you know, and mm-hmm. I mean, it's already beginning to happen. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. So,
anyway. Hey, Jody, have you always been a manifester like that, too?
Have I what?
Manifested things that way, too. Is that the way you've operated?
No.
Interesting. But you have...
I'm learning. You know, I'm learning to trust that process more and more.
Interesting. So was it, I
keep stepping towards it, and it keeps proving itself, but I keep doubting. So I'm learning. But
well,
he's a little ahead of me.
And Jody is a great writer. I mean, I'm not saying that because she's here. Stunning writer. You know, and I'm grateful Gail said and made the comment, when are you going to do? Because she's moving in that direction, you know, or at least we're moving in that direction collectively. And irony is, I am a great project manager of getting books birthed. I mean, my Tarian blood, boy, it just, what's the next step? You know, walk around the hurdle, what's the next step? And that's how the trips happen, that's how the painting career. You know, I didn't do just one painting style. Collectively, I just figured out where's the wind blowing, just like sailing, and adjust your sails, or there's no wind at all and you just have to be calm. I mean, you know, but the interesting part is, so, do you have a dream? What is your dream? And I would encourage you to write it down and not share it with anybody that you don't think is your champion. Because it is so easy in what I call the incubation stage, I could raise an eyebrow and you would stop. Because otherwise you would have already achieved it. And I'm picking on you a little tiny bit, but I'm just saying it is that volatile about anybody. In fact, we even have this discussion. I took her by a big RV that had pulled the car behind and said, I'd like to share an idea that I have a dream. But I don't want you, she's from Philadelphia, so they have a tendency to tell you exactly what they mean real quickly. And at that particular point, I'm too volatile that I'm opening up and kind of going, universe, I would like this big RV, and pulling a car behind it. That's my dare to dream. At the moment, if I was to look at my checkbook or this or that, I'd say, man, that you've been either smoking something or in turn, you're not in reality. But I also talk about daring to dream. So I'll write down the same thing. So that piece of paper, I'll pick it up and write it down this afternoon or in the morning. This is my dream, is to be able to have this and pull a car behind it and in turn travel all over the United States, inspiring people to dare to dream. And because that's really, I mean, you could land me on an island and I would begin talking to the palm trees and anybody there about what is your dream. That's what I do. It's what I do naturally. It's what I love to do. And I love to hear when I go, and they email me and go, in fact, I have an email address. So if you're taking a step in your direction, especially if you've gone to Kickstarter, send me something. I'd be happy to support your dream.
I've supported artists on Kickstarter.
It's a great program because a lot of projects get stopped.
Yeah.
How do I get it funded? And it just shocks. I mean, it hits you dead in the tracks because you go, I'm looking at here, and I have to go talk to my wife or my spouse. They're gonna poo-poo the idea, you know. And so I have to do it in silence. But Kickstarter allows you. You know what? It doesn't mean that it's a guarantee. It just means that you're kind of stepping in a direction. But I'm just loving the idea. How many people are now coming out of the woodwork? I've been sitting on something for 2 or 3 years. I'm going, then take it. What's your next baby step? Even today, what's your next baby step that you can take in the direction of whatever it is you're wanting to do?